The following podcast contains opinion and explicit language. My name's Reese Jarrett.
You go.
I go.
Yes.
And my name is Mark DeLange.
And this is The Raw Cut. Welcome, everybody, to The Raw Cut, a podcast of rich opinion. And I have got the man himself, the Dutchman, the best Dutchman, Mark DeLange.
Right. Well, thank you for that.
It wasn't the best intro for you?
It was probably more than was warranted, and I can only assume and expect to fully not live up to that.
At least it wasn't the Dutchman that decided to raid your national or former national it's still national broadcaster.
Yep, absolutely. Your
national broadcaster with a gun and try to
That's an interesting episode though. I'm curious to see what he actually wanted. I mean, we know that he wanted airtime, but I would like to know what it was that he was going to make public.
I can't make a white joke here because otherwise that won't make sense because it's Dutch.
A white joke.
Yes, I was.
I'm missing the point.
I was going to say is that he must be serious because he's white, because normally the stereotype is a black guy with a gun.
Or a swarthy Arab. Even though his name was Physique or thereabouts, something like that.
It's actually not that correct. That's politically incorrect. It's this sound. That's the better sound.
Yes, exactly. Good, Reese, as long as you're aware of it, that's good.
So, what have you been up to lately?
I've been holidaying.
Oh, you've been holidaying. Yes,
except for this week, because this week we've been back on board.
Work.
Yep.
Where have you been holidaying?
Mostly at home.
Oh. You didn't go into special places anymore?
Special places. I climbed the Mount Kosciuszko. I don't know if that's special. I thought it was.
That's pretty special. No snow, though. No, not this time.
There was some in very, very isolated spots. Right. Yeah.
Okay. Well.
But hey, it's amateur snow.
Oh.
This time of year.
Yes.
It'll be serious snow come winter, but
you never get serious snow in Australia.
in winter, you would.
Well, do you want to get into some politics?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, okay.
We now have two new knights, former Defence Chief Angus Houston and Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh.
I'm just really pleased that in his 90s, we in this country are able to properly acknowledge what he's done for us.
Prime Minister, it's Australia Day, we're not a bunch of tossers, let's get it right.
Just totally inappropriate. He's not part of our community.
I think he would be honoured. I think he'd be amused by some of the comments.
Tony Abbott has made a completely irrational decision.
Having an Australian head of state is not an irrelevancy, and I think today's awarding of a knighthood to a member of the British royal family, I think just shows we need to consider what sort of nation we want to present to the world.
If they do something completely bonkers, you have no idea what Tony Abbott might do next.
Social media is kind of like electronic graffiti, and I think that in the media you'd make a big mistake to pay too much attention to social media.
It makes you wonder whether Tony Abbott ever really did renounce his British citizenship.
And for a lot of voters, that is, and indeed should be, rather scary.
Well, it's been a very royal week in politics. Waiting for the ending. Waiting for the ending.
It's nearly there.
Ah, Okay, well, you can talk
there we
now.
Go. Was that your own montage there, Rhys?
Yes, I put that together. It took me an hour.
Some interesting snippets here and there.
I thought you really liked the music. It sort of matched the week really nicely, the whole knighthood thing, which we're going to talk about now.
It's been waltzing along really nicely, hasn't it?
Oh, that deserves something. That deserves that.
No, because it wasn't politically incorrect.
Oh.
You got the wrong one.
It doesn't matter. It was still pretty goofy. The whole week's goofy, so yeah, it deserves a goofy.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking this one.
Oh, that one?
Yeah.
Oh, it didn't play. You want to play? There we go.
There we go.
It's warming up. It can't quite get there.
It's an apple. I'll forgive you.
Okay, well, Tony Abbott announced this week the knighthoods for this year, which is a system that he brought back last year. Was the old traditional monarchy system where you announce someone as a knight and you get the sir title at the beginning of your name.
Knight of the realm.
The Knight of the realm. Well, one of the knighthoods went to former Defence Force Chief Angus Houston, and the second one went to Prince Philip.
You can't even say it without laughing, can you?
Now, most Australians think that the knighthood system is pretty outdated, but many like the Order of Australia Medal, which was the replacement for the knighthood system when it was initially scrapped. This sort of just shows you how crazy Tony Abbott is about the monarchy and just has, which, you know, the monarchy has nothing to do with Australia anymore, really. It's just sort of a bit sad.
Well, formally it has, obviously. I mean, the Queen is still our head of state.
Yeah, she is, but she doesn't do anything.
No, it doesn't have much relevancy.
No, it's not like a president or anything like that where he or she gets a veto power.
I'll put a disclaimer in here and remind people that I am Dutch, so...
There we go. There we go.
And that was politically incorrect, apparently. There we go. So some of the stuff that I might say might not make any sense.
Okay. You there just might it's suddenly
a general
burst out in
nice
the second language.
Blanket disclaimer there.
Well, that's what the opinion part is at the beginning of the podcast.
There we go.
That sort of covers our ass, sort of. The whole monarchy thing is just a bit bizarre, especially in this modern Australia, where we don't live by their rules anymore. We live by our own laws. We live by our own government, essentially.
Our own
the Queen does nothing.
Yep.
Exactly. Yeah. The Queen does nothing besides... It's almost like she's a Facebook follower. She just sort of sees on a news feed, oh, the government's changing hands. Oh, yes, sure, yes. It's sort of...
Look what Tony's done. How nice of him. What a good little chap. Why would he... Well, hang on. Surely Prince Philip is a prince already. Why would he then also need to be a knight?
Apparently he's got like something 30 titles or something stupid.
Yes.
He's been awarded same sort of things from all of the different commonwealths.
They're very, very, very colourful and flowery titles. And I believe there's elephants in there and the Order of the Elephant or something.
That sounds South African.
No. I can't recall what it was, but... look it up. It's on the internet, people.
The internet. It's very bizarre, the whole thing. I don't quite understand. Why are we going towards this sort of monarchy thing? He's sort of obsessed, really.
Oh, I don't know. Look.
Is it because, the monarchy's suddenly cool again because the two got married? Is that the thing?
I don't know. If that was the case, then probably the monarchy got... uncool really quickly when the allegations against Prince Andrew arose. I mean, to be honest, I think the whole thing is silly. Not just the fact that Tony Abbott thought it was necessary to bring back the knighthoods and to bestow one upon Prince Philip, but also the whole hoo-ha that's being made of it. I mean... If he wants to give somebody a pat on the back, go for it.
I think the whole...
I'm really not fast, to be honest. But then, I'm Dutch.
I think the whole reason why all of the Australians are sort of a bit pissed off here is because that he said that when he reintroduced this system, He said that this is for Australians.
Yes, you're right, and but also I think it just the way he's gone about this, it shows that Tony Abbott, you know, appears to believe that governing Australia is the Tony Abbott show, and it shouldn't be.
Mm. Well, I think we've exploited ourselves on that topic a lot.
I haven't exploited myself, no. And I don't intend to do so.
That's probably a wrong choice of words there. I wasn't quite thinking straight there. I am sorry, everybody. Well,
unless you're going to be paid for it, in which case you may exploit yourself as much as you like, but leave me out of it, please.
You can sponsor us, you know that. The email address is info@rawcut.com.au if you're wondering. Well, let's have a look at the Queensland election. Now, we're recording this podcast on the 30th, so that means tomorrow is the Queensland state election.
Which by the time you hear this, you'll have travelled back in time.
Which means, which we haven't talked about a lot. We haven't discussed a lot about the Queensland election in the past month. And, you're looking at figurines now.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know why I put them there. Some things from the Kinder Surprise.
Very interesting. I should probably say what they are.
Okay, go ahead.
There is this... probably 4 centimeter tall figurine of Snow White. I think she deserves
a little. I need to change the screen.
There we go. And then can we have a signature sound for the Little Mermaid Ariel as well?
There we go. That's what coming out of the water.
Coming out of the water. Righto.
Well, back to the Queensland politics, because that's what our show's about, is politics in Australia.
Ah, yes. This would have been a nice segue of sorts, somehow or other, from something towards, or the other way around, the knighthoods and stuff, because we've got princesses.
Okay. I didn't think of that. Good thinking, 99. Well, now since this podcast
is... too late.
Now, since this podcast is being published after the election result, you can probably go online now to your favourite news website. I'll probably put something up on the Raw Cut after the election's finished.
A good public service.
I need to put ads on it on the website. Yeah, so it's already built for ads, and I haven't got any on there. But anyway, that's my thing. So you go onto the website and you'll be able to see the election results right there. Now, the Queensland Parliament differs from other Australian state parliaments because it's only has a single house. In most other parliaments, like in the federal parliament for the states, they have two houses, like the House of Representatives and the Senate. Generally, it's the House of Assembly and the Legislative Council. In the territories, they normally just have one house. I think Tasmania does have two houses. I did check that today. And the result for the Queensland election in 2012 was the Liberal National Party with 78 seats. The Labor Party got a mere 7 seats, and then 4 other seats going to different parties, Katta Australia Party and the Independents. So if Labor really wants to get back at the LNP, the Liberals, they're going to really have to push it right there. It's a bit of...
Yes. But, that said, if you look at the latest polls and comparisons and whatnot, it appears that they're... What's the Labor candidate again?
I should have written her name down.
She's got an Eastern European surname. I know that.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, you'll edit this out.
probably not.
if you want to.
Just put a highly automated voice that says Anna, blah, 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 blah.
In any case.
We're sorry, Queenslanders, and we're sorry for the.
I saw a quick comparison on the public's confidence in their ability and their trustworthiness. And she is well ahead of Campbell Newman on all fronts.
Which is interesting.
Across, what they also did was they polled, or it wasn't an actual poll, it was more of a questionnaire probably, but they surveyed across voters or with a range of their preferred party. So across all of those, except for the LNP, except for the Liberals, are they the LNP?
The LNP, it's sort of like a joint party now. Yeah, it's sort of like the National Party and the Liberal Party sort of joint together as a formal party.
Yeah, I think it's the National bit that sort of threw me out there for a second, because
if we are talking about a state election, then what does a National Party have to do there? But never mind.
it's the country party, the Nationals.
And yes, yeah, yes.
That's what they like to be represented about.
There we go. We're back.
we're back.
Yes. But in any case, it was only the people that intended to vote Liberal that didn't score Anna.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Higher.
Yeah.
On both those trades, which I thought was interesting.
I also saw another.
Then again, I've also, after that, I read that she's recently made a few gaffes in a few interviews where she couldn't name the level of the GST currently. So, but, you know, shenanigans,
just,
I say.
That's just a sort of minor detail,
it
really.
It is.
The GST, I mean, we think it's 10% in South Australia. I'm not quite sure what it is in Queensland. I think it differs from state to state. But
it's 10% there as well. Okay. Yeah.
Well,
she recalled that later on. But she had to pass. This is what I suppose bothers me a little bit about Australian politics, is where these little things are being put under a magnifying glass and being made into issues. Because the fact was, she was in this sort of 10-second quiz on a radio show, and one of the questions was, what's the level of the GST? And, you know, when you're going like that...
Yeah, 1,000 miles an hour, you're going to miss a certain fact. I mean, it's a fairly minute fact.
Exactly. That's what I...
Mind you, when Tony Abbott stuffs up things like that, we criticise him.
I'm not going to go there. I don't have to, because he's doing it all himself already. So there we go.
Well, the main difference, so as I said, there's quite a hike for the Labor Party if they want to try and regain government to get there. It's going to have to be like 30 seats at least, which is a lot more than the 7 that they already have now. And the major policy difference that we have found over the election campaign is the privatisation of public assets. Labor wants to keep the assets with the public and pay off the debt with the profits made on those public assets. And then also the Liberal Party wants to privatise those same assets, sort of sell them for a quick buck, which I think is fairly typical of the Liberals, to be honest. So, now according to the polls, Conservative Premier Campbell Newman could lose his seat, actually, where he is. I didn't get the name of the seat.
Ashgrove,
there we are, that's it. So he could lose this seat, which would be very embarrassing for him if he does lose it. So that would be an interesting thing to watch.
Obviously, by the time people hear this, they already know. But another thing that I read on this beautiful internet that we have, apparently, legally, it's possible for a person to not retain their seat, yet still remain in office.
Yes. Well, let's elaborate on that with this soundbite that I have.
But the possibility is now being raised that even if he loses Ashgrove, Campbell Newman could potentially stay on as Premier. Anne Toomey is a Professor of Constitutional Law at the University of Sydney. She says if Campbell Newman loses his seat, but the LNP wins, he would have two choices.
One is he can resign as Premier and let somebody else take over and just drop out of politics. The second choice is the more controversial one, and that is to stay on as Premier and seek a new seat, perhaps by persuading one of his loyal members to resign and make way for him so that there's a by-election and a new seat.
She says there is no express provision in the Queensland Constitution requiring the Premier to be a Member of Parliament. So if Newman lost his seat, it would not automatically vacate his office as Premier. The same is true for the Australian Constitution. For example, in 2007, when John Howard was defeated in Benelong and continued as Prime Minister until the swearing-in of the ALP's Kevin Rudd.
So, a comparison there. There we go. We got it cleared up.
In the word persuade in that soundbite obviously means bullying. But
oh, thank you for pointing that out.
We aim to please.
Yes. It sort of makes me think if he's actually going to do that if he loses his seat. It's sort of, I'm actually thinking he might actually do it.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't be surprised either.
I remember where I read the article. It was on ABC, on the Drum. And it also said that if, for a period of 90 days, that would be acceptable.
Okay.
For a period of 90 days to not have a seat, and as long as...
That's why it worked for John Howard.
Yeah. Mind you, again, John Howard, federal, and...
Yeah.
The constitution for the federal constitution obviously is slightly different from
yeah, but they said that it was on that particular bit of the constitution is almost the same.
Okay,
so that's why I was saying that's why it worked for John Howard.
Yeah.
Though that will be interesting. So they've actually said the LNP have actually said that. Oh, there'll be just a new leader. We'll cycle around. We'll just find another person for it. That's what they've actually said in the past. But I'm not quite believing them.
Look, I don't think that Newman is the kind of person to just step aside.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out.
Yes. Well, we're going to have to stay tuned to our TV screens.
Fuck it!
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Where did that come from?
Well... Bill O'Reilly was a little bit angry there. He had an outburst. Well, metadata is back in the news. I need that sound. Oh, where is it? There we are. That's a bit better. That works. I didn't clip then. Oh, I was wondering if I was clipping the soundboard there because I had the volume up too loud now. Well, data. Metadata's back in the news, and Telstra has always said, oh yes, we can do this, it's easy, sure, no worries. But now they've fronted up to a joint committee in the Parliament, National Parliament, not the State Fund. That will make more sense now. They've headed up to a federal parliamentary committee and said, yeah, it really isn't that simple.
Under the metadata retention scheme, Telstra and all the other nation's telcos and internet companies would be forced to store customer metadata for 2 years. That data, said Telstra, would be kept in a huge database, ready to be given to law enforcement on request. But like Winnie the Pooh and a big jar of honey, Telstra's Chief Information Security Officer Mike Burgess says customer information would be very attractive to hackers.
The issue here is that now we're advertising that for a customer of Telstra, there's a whole range of data, depending on what services they have, that will be made available or can be made available upon lawful request for 2 years. If I was that way inclined as a hacker, you would go for that system because it would give you the pot of gold as opposed to working your way through our multitudes of systems today.
Really? I didn't know that.
To try and extract some data.
Telstra says it already keeps a certain amount of customer data for business purposes, but the mandatory data retention scheme would require it to keep more data than it currently does. Telstra says it would have to create a new information system to store, process and send out data to law enforcement, and that comes with risks.
We would have to put extra measures in place to make sure that that data was safe from those who should not have access to it.
Oh, wow, what a surprise. Oh, seriously, it's this whole... sort of schizophrenic thing all over again. ASIO is just going over and over and over. Is, oh, we have to have the metadata, we have the metadata, oh, come on, give it the metadata. It's sort of a bit over the top, really.
Yes. Look, I don't know enough about it all to really say much, but it is...
It's the data of data.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah. I know that. I'm not completely okay. daft. But...
Just making sure.
As is, you're right. There we go. But... But it goes back to something that we've talked about before, where the current government seems to feel a need to score points on security.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're obviously happy to scare people about things that may or may not happen. And this national security thing is really high on their list, and they seem to... yeah, like I said, want to score on that. And by doing that, divert the attention away from things where then, you know, less successful.
Yeah, the irony is that having these private companies, because it's not the government that's storing it, having these private companies forcibly storing this data all in these, in a cluster of servers, basically, it'll be all in the same sort of server sort of instance. And the irony is that that's a security risk in itself.
Yes.
You're going to get people finding out, or you're going to get people doing inside jobs, getting all of this data and selling it on the internet. What incentive is there for administrators who are working in the Telstra servers or servers of any other ISP to not get that data and sell it under someone's back, or behind someone's back is probably the best phrase for it. But it's just seriously.
It's just fraught with all sorts of risks, and frankly, I have nothing to say about it.
But Telstra is a big ISP.
Yes.
They own most of Australia's cables. Well, they're...
All the infrastructure.
The infrastructure. So, it might have been sold to the government by now. I'm not quite sure of that, but it's the whole NBN thing. That's another thing altogether. But... they own most of the infrastructure, as I believe, and they're a very big ISP. And then there's also smaller ISPs that pay for the use of Telstra's infrastructure, and they're going to have that same system in their servers to be able to store all this metadata.
Unless there is a clause in whatever the contract ends up being that allows Telstra to actually tap into the things that their cables carry.
On ADSL, for example...
If that's at all technically possible, which I assume it will be.
Sort of. On ADSL, for example...
Because computers can do anything, can't they?
Yes, they could. But, for example, on ADSL, there's the exchange, and then there's the wires to the home.
Mm-hmm.
And in the exchange, every ISP have their own DSLAM, which is basically the bit that connects all of the analog phone wires to the main trunk cable. Every single ISP has one of those. Normally, it's coupled with a server and different bits and pieces. And that connects them straight to the ISP and not necessarily over to Telstra. It sort of connects them into the ISP, where whoever's the ISP that has that box. So what Telstra does is that they basically sell space in their exchanges.
All right.
And along with that, the ISPs come in and install their own infrastructure within the exchange, and part of that rental fee for the exchange, you also pay for the wires, and that's sort of how it works. Going by that ADSL wise, mind you, it's ADSL, so it's going to be different things for cable, fiber, wireless, all that sort of stuff. So going by that, it's going to have to be every individual single ISP and not just Telstra.
Hmm. Righto.
So, they're going to have to fork out a bit of money.
And big risks that are actually then multiplied across all service providers.
Mm. No. It's not a very good picture, to be honest.
No.
Because they're going to have to...
Anonymous will be rubbing their hands.
They're going to have to build that whole new system. It's not just the actual... The physical servers themselves, they're going to have to build the software like from scratch to be able to maintain this metadata to the specific Australian standard that the government sets. And even though metadata is really nothing more than just a text file for everyone, it's text file for everyone. Still a lot of people out there that are connected to the internet, and that adds up. So, yeah, I think people just don't quite understand that it's a little bit more than what it is. It's just people go, oh, it's metadata. It's a little bit on the end sort of thing. But it's not just a little bit. It's actually quite a lot. It even includes your location and stuff like that, especially if you're on a mobile phone. I think politically it's an intrusion of privacy, especially if if you're not being pursued by the authorities for a specific reason. And I think that's the biggest problem is that they're not getting a warrant.
That's the thing. They're by granting themselves these powers, or granting ASIO these powers, they're actually saying, we're going to be collecting a lot of information about you, and it's I think it's a tiny step away from the reverse of innocent until proven guilty.
Yes, sort of like it's, the way that they
we'll
do
collect,
traffic
we'll
law.
Collect proof, and if you're not guilty, we're not using it. Well, hang on, it's supposed to be the other way around. There needs to be a reasonable suspicion,
yeah,
and then you start collecting proof.
That's how it works. You need reasonable suspicion, you need a warrant from a judge, and then you go. You don't just go. That's not how we work.
Yes. Well, obviously, their answer will be, look, this is in the interest of national security, and if we go about things the way you've just described them, then we'll only find out about any terrorist plans when it's too late.
Yeah, yes. Well, you got to remember that this data is quite a lot. It's no small thing.
Mm.
As I've said before, you need, as ASIO, if I'm ASIO, I'm going to need to search through the whole lot or figure out a way to search through the whole lot to try and find that one instance where a guy's going to blow up a building.
Exactly.
It's a lot of stuff to wade through.
A sea of information per person, really.
Yes.
And it's emails, phone calls, everything, the lot. But a sea of information or a needle in a haystack, whichever metaphor you want to apply to it.
It's all there. It's all the same thing because.
But you know, arguably, that's good for employment.
Oh, you could.
It'll create a few jobs.
it's good for employment, but shithouse for privacy. What
absolutely.
Do you choose?
Yep.
Yes, it's sort of there's a lot of irony based around this whole issue. But
irony and coppery, probably.
Well.
And glass fibery.
Well, going with this whole issue, continuing, ASIO, we sort of all think it's this whole organization where they're the really sophisticated spies, don't you? We all think that. That's what the image that they like to put out. Do you agree?
Probably. They should. I don't know, but they should. If they want to be taken serious as a security agency, then yes, by all means.
Well, let's have a listen to their embarrassing ways of getting the data.
Oh, there's interesting bits, is there?
There's interesting bits, yes. Cool. Very embarrassing way for them to request this data from Telstra.
Do they go around door knocking and saying, excuse me, are you involved in any subversive activities? hand over your proof.
It's not that bad.
Hand over your evidence, please.
It's not that bad, but it's still pretty bad.
Last year, there were around 85,000 metadata requests from law enforcement agencies to Telstra, and that is growing by the year. Shadow Attorney General Mark Dreyfus was interested in how Telstra currently receives requests for accessing that customer data.
And what actually happens? I'm assuming, for illustration, let's say it starts with an email from the Australian Federal Police.
Oh, if only we were that electronic. Largely it's fax. So agencies are authorised.
Well, fax electronic.
Yes, we live in the dark ages, unfortunately.
So you get a fax?
Often, yes.
Right?
Is that
your legacy systems or theirs?
Theirs.
Oh dear. Fax. That's one of the
fucking
things.
Fucking thing sucks!
There we go. That's one of those things that baffles me about daily life, actually. There's so many so many organizations out there that still work with faxes and
yeah,
you know,
conveyances.
I get requests for fax. Can you fax me this? And I go, what?
What? And it's like,
we stopped using fax well before we came out here to Australia, which was, what, 7.5 years ago? Eight plus. But I'm thinking, hang on,
technology, people, yeah.
Yes. Surely you would just scan stuff and email it.
Yeah. Why do you even need a scanner? Isn't it created on the computer anyway?
There you go. Well, you know, if stuff needs to be signed, you'd scan.
You would think that,
or you'd have an electronic signature and be done with it.
You would think they would have some sort of, if they're worried about security so much, you would think they would have some sort of encrypted email system or something like that. Yes. With Telstra.
No,
but I bet you no we can't use encryption, because encryption's evil, and if we start using it as ASIO, then that means it will be okay for the peasants to use it.
Look, the whole thing reminds me of this story that I once heard. That this would have been early 90s, when email was first put in, yeah, when email, yeah, first came into the workplace, that government agencies and companies would have a person that that monitored the email, and then
the email monitor.
Yes, and what they then did,
very important work.
Well, absolutely, but what they did was to print off each and every email and then put them in people's pigeonholes.
They couldn't afford a computer for everyone, I'm guessing. So it's better for us to employ someone than just to hand out the emails. But many people know that basically sending an email is like sending just something onto the public notice board. It's not very secure, but yet you can still make it very secure by having encrypted protocols. There's a lot of programs out there that can encrypt your emails. I think even built into programs like Firebird or Outlook, you can actually get some sort of encryption. So it's not that hard.
No,
and I don't know why
they're
so scared.
But you got to start thinking like government agencies when you're talking about this stuff. The
government agency thing, you know, with computers.
It's the paranoia thing. Because if ASIO starts encrypting their emails and send encrypted emails to Telstra, then Telstra must have access to the encryption codes and everything to...
You would have a separate encryption code for that specific
to access emails. The actual information. And it is a way of... I mean, in a sense, it's sharing information. Government doesn't like that.
But no, you would have a specific... Trust no one encryption, I think, is the term. Mm. You would have a specific system for that single purpose only. So it wouldn't be a wide...
Yeah, obviously. Just
it wouldn't be... I think there's a lot of systems now that use...
Why faxes? Why? In God's name, why?
It's not like someone can't just go down to the phone junction and tap the cable at all. Of course not.
And with 85,000 requests and growing, if they all come through on fax, you'd go through hundreds of cartridges of toner.
Oh yeah.
Fucking thing sucks.
Faxing things suck.
Oh yes, that's we need to give you a ding for that.
Ah,
there's a ding.
Thank you for giving me my ding.
Well. Do you think we should start wrapping up the show?
Yeah, go for it. Sure you've got something lined up for it.
Yes, the segue.
I don't know what that means, to play us out. What does that mean? To end the show?
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mark DeLunga, for coming into the Raw Cup podcast for this week, the second episode that you've done.
Yes, scary.
Yeah. Are your nerves behind the microphone sort of evening out yet or not?
I don't know that I'm really that nervous, but
you said you're uncomfortable. It's I think that was the first thing that you said in the last episode.
Oh, okay. Yep.
You made a reference to it at least, and I thought I should just check up on you.
I like
make sure you're,
things.
Yeah. You're not having a schizophrenic fit or anything.
I wouldn't rule anything out.
Well, thank you very much for coming in and talk about shit. It's not that shitty. Really.
Have we wrapped up yet, or is this still on?
This is sort of the segue to the outro, and then it's the outro.
Okay. Wow. Increasingly sophisticated.
Yes,
here.
It's a very sophisticated operation here at the Royal Cut.
Do you use faxes at all?
No. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Raw Cut Podcast. You can find us online at rawcut.com.au, where we post a numerous amount of different things, including videos. And you can also find me on a number of different social networks. Our tag, our name on those social networks, we unified it all to rawcut.au. So we're on Facebook and Twitter with the tag rawcut.au. And I need to put the fading up. And then put the fader on so it starts off slow. There we go. Well, thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Reese.
And we'll see you all next time here on the Rockin' Podcast.